Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Coulter, joined once again by Nick Mihai. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
And the man with his own intro music now, Brenton O'Brien, for his debut pod.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Pleasure to have you in. We'll get into who Brenton is in just a second. Once again, coaches, thanks very much for listening on this one. Once again, if you can like, share, subscribe, retweet, all the things that come with growing a podcast audience, that would be fantastic. Try and reach as many people as we can with this and the Talking Split socials. That would be fantastic. You can, of course, follow along online on the Talking Split Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. It's been a little dormant of late, but I'll be working on that over the next month or so to try and get something up and about there. So, first-time podcast, Brenton O'Brien, welcome in as the high-performance coach for the Vic Country Men. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Let's hear a little bit about you as we pick apart your resume.
So for me, I've been involved with the Vic Country program now since I was 17 years old. So being
how old are you now?
Oh, 34.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's been a long time.
Good tenure.
Now. Yeah, it's been a while. I still remember my first Pacific Coast Slam. That's where I started when I was 17 years old, and I was an assistant coach with the under 15 boys, I think it was, which was pretty cool, like good experience, and that kind of set me up for all of this because I found that it was a place where I felt like I belonged, and everyone made me feel really welcome. So since then, just been involved with the programs all the way from Jamborees all the way through under 14s to under 18s, really.
Yep. And did some VJBL Big V coaching throughout, I'm assuming?
Yeah, so I was at Geelong for most of that, where I coached under 12s, 16s, 18s, Youth League, Division 1 men, and then was on the NBL 1 bench, and then also been at Knox with their NBL 1 men as well.
Yep, and would be remiss of us not to talk about Maribyrnong Secondary College, where you've previously come from as well.
Yeah, so I spent 5 years there, finished uni at about, how old was I, 29, I think it was, and got the job there, and yeah, it was an awesome experience. Got to really develop my coaching and got to work with some really good athletes.
Yep, so basketball lifer, obviously, yep. As it turns out.
We're forgetting a key thing here, I think.
Yep.
You won a gold medal. Like, that's a – do you want to talk about that one or no?
Oh, the boys did that. But, yeah, no, it was a great –
humility early
what
on.
A coach answer that is.
Nah, it was
very different to what he says in the office, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've got to
that
make
is
sure.
Not how I would answer either, by the way.
Got to make sure people don't think things of me. I think, yeah, the gold medal this year still, yeah, it was this year, was a great experience. Like, being involved for so long, I still remember – my first ever camp at Bendigo working with Marty Hansen, and then when I found out that he was the coach that was the last coach to win a gold medal with the under-18s, it was a pretty cool experience. So it meant the world to us all. So I think to be able to go in with those boys and win a gold medal was just – it's all you can ask for as a coach, really. Like,
well, it's not all you can ask for because you've got a fairly exciting week coming up fairly soon. So appointed as the head coach of the under-17 men for the Samoa tournament, so Oceania.
Yeah. Right? So lucky enough to be able to go represent my country, which is something I've always wanted to do. It's an awesome experience so far and really excited to get over there with that group of people and coaches and athletes and actually experience some international basketball.
Yep. Fairly quick prep, obviously. Yeah. Selection camp straight into get on the plane.
Yeah. Five sessions, I think it ended up being. And then, on the plane, I think we get one session and then we're on the floor.
Yep. Jeez, every minute counts, doesn't it?
It is. It really is. I'm curious now. Did that lack of preparation, for lack of a better term, because you just don't get hours and hours and hours to be able to do that. What impact did that have on your planning for the content that went into the preparation for that?
A lot, actually. It was how could I make it as clear and as simple as possible and get what we needed in there. And to be honest, even after when we reflect on how it went, there were still things I wish we could have got in, but did the best we could to get everything we thought we needed in there and just make sure that when we get there, we can play basketball together and it looks like basketball. So I think we got to that and be interesting when we get there. Obviously, there'll be things that we miss, but can't wait to get there.
No, it should be a huge experience. So congratulations on the appointment, not just at BV, but also with the BA group. So it should be interesting. Zoe's head coaching the women's group there as well. So we'll put the link to the games up on the Talking Split social. So anyone that wants to have a little bit of a look at that, can do. A lot of Victorians in your group, from memory?
Yeah, I think there's five.
Yep.
I think it's five.
Yep, so there's usually someone that you will know from around the Victorian basketball circles within that group. So definitely worth having a little bit of a look at international basketball because it is just so different to what we deal with here. It's I can't stress that enough. So would be fantastic. We're into coach shout-out on this one.
He's the coach shout out.
I'm glad you still like it, Nick, because I'm very out on that jingle, but that's okay.
I love it.
Awesome. So, I love the dancing. Our coach shout out this week is for Zoe Messman. So, she was the head coach for the Launceston Tornadoes last season. And has been the newly appointed head coach of the, I want to say, North Tasmania. I probably should have done some prep work on this. North Tasmania Basketball Club for the women's program. So she stepped into the role previously and had big shoes to fill. The Tawns this year had many young players, so committed to build a really good ethic amongst them. The heart and determination the young group played right to the very end and showed outstanding culture that was fostered throughout the group. The coach that is nominated for this also... flag that she let them come and watch her under 20 state team trials for the upcoming nationals, because she's also coaching the under 20 women's team for Tasmania. A high school teacher, mum, coaches in her own time, has got a world of things going on, but still continues to give back to those in that community. And I think that's fantastic personally that they do have someone down there that is a Tasmanian product, for lack of a better term, that gives back a lot into that community and a coach at that level. And it's fantastic to see her coaching at the NBL 1 level, obviously, with Northern Tasmania, but also into the state team program. I think is going to be a really good thing as well. So coach, shout out to Zoe Messman and all the work that she puts in there. So I think that's a good one. The segment that everyone has loved, back by popular demand.
It's Rob's Rant. He's on the mic complaining about stuff he just don't like, from bad parking to soggy chips. Rob's Rants on Talking Split.
Now that's an intro. So, Rob's Rants for this week. I'm actually welcoming someone else over onto Rob Rants Island this week, Chris Anstey, who has thrown out during the week on Twitter, "I'm old enough to remember when basketball players could hit a three and run back on defense without some 'look at me, I hit a three' celebration." I am on board this. So heavily on board this. Welcome, Chris. Like, it feels good to have the island a little bit more populated than just myself complaining about Halloween and those sorts of things. But so on board this, it's not funny. And the over-celebrating, like for mine, straight away, like if you have to over-celebrate making a three, it probably means you don't make many of them in the first place, which would maybe speak to a skill deficiency that you could be working on instead. Just the ability to play with a little bit of humility, I think, play with some class and play the right way. The over-celebrating culture, I think, that's starting to creep in a little bit to our junior players and sometimes the senior players, depending on whether they're wearing like two arm sleeves and a leg sleeve and a calf sleeve or something like that as well, doesn't need to be there. Like the celebrating, Nick, does my head in.
It's... Again, I agree with Rob's rant, first of all. Like, that's Bang two on. In a row. Yep. Like, I'm just... You're giving me easy ones, right? They're easy ones to agree with.
They've been layups early.
Yeah, but it's... I remember talking about this where I came back to coaching 18s. I took a year off, and a kid hit a three that we're playing against in a grading game, and then he was starting to shoot some arrows into the crowd. And I turned to my bench, and I go, "What is he doing? They're down 30. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, well, cameras are here." Right, and that's what it fed to. He was feeding towards that to get those social media likes or clicks or whatever it was. And I was like, okay, now I'm officially old, because this makes zero sense to me why you would do something like that.
Absolutely. Brenton, you probably see it a fair bit, having come from the school system as well, where it's, you know, you see young kids a fair bit over-celebrating.
Yeah, I'm to be honest, it's something that if I was in a selection meeting and I was seeing that, it's probably something that would impact that. I think... the ability to be able to move on to what's next and just seeing that it just shows that kids are looking at the wrong things. And I completely agree. At school tournaments, I still remember seeing it, even in the Nationals and even in NBL 1, you see it all the time. And then you see someone score a layup down the other end and you see the coach losing their mind. So I think that's something, I agree with both of you. It's something that needs to change.
Have you seen the grenade one?
No, I don't think I have.
I think it's LaMelo Ball. He shoots a three and he imitates throwing a grenade and then grabs his ears.
Yep.
And then does this down the court. They do this. So I've seen some of the kids do that, and I'm like, oh, cool. That's great. It's getting worse.
What an era of basketball we're living in at the moment. It's like, it's remember in, what was that movie, Basketball? When they talk about it, the cracking movie, don't get me wrong. But they talk about it at the start where it's like, you know, that era of people over-celebrating touchdowns and all the choreographed answers. And I think at one stage they're doing like Irish line dancing after a touchdown or something like that. We're not that far. Like, you know, life imitates art. Mm. We are getting to that point where, you know, do we really need that? Like, and it's...
Yeah, they must be working on it, right? Like, it's problem. So well choreographed,
yeah.
Lack of a better term, that... It looks like they've practiced this somewhere.
So, okay, my question is, because I'm not a person to bring a problem without a solution, how do we fix it? That's my question on this one.
Well, I guess it's for me, if you've got a team, it's what's most important, focus on the process, like the culture building, like for when I take a team, especially older groups, like 17, 18, 19, the culture piece is don't be a nice man, be a good man. And then we just put down what a nice man does and what a good man does. This is for the boys' side, obviously. And those values help build, hopefully, a process where you're not celebrating a three down the floor. You're actually going back into D-trance.
Yep.
That's potential solution for me on the boys' side.
Yep. Anything, Brent?
That's a tough one. I think I'm on the same line as Nick there. I think just teaching them what's most important. And, like, I think just to go back to, like, the state teams I've coached, I think D-trans has always been the number one thing we're focused on because in under-18s, like, takeaway layups are usually in a pretty good spot, and that's definitely not the way to do that. So
no, and that's probably the bizarre part, isn't it? That might be the catalyst, in all honesty. If we pay a little bit more attention to maybe our defensive transition rules, that might subdue the celebrations just a little bit in that world. And it's funny, like Brendan Joyce jumped in there as well and he's like, yeah, I can't believe they do this. And it's like, we've officially hit old age. Like, when we are getting to this point where we don't want kids celebrating... Yes, celebrate, be excited about it. Like, if you had a game winner, no worries. Like, you know, run around like a lunatic and all those sorts of things. But, you know, just making a shot, that's kind of part of the core values of what we should be doing as a basketball player in the first place. It's what you're trained to do and it's what you want to do. That shouldn't be over-celebrated, I wouldn't have thought. But, you know, again, old man yells at cloud over here. you know, maybe I'm not quite as attuned to the young athletes as maybe I'd like. Funnily enough, don't see it on the girl side all that often. Like,
no, me neither. I haven't really seen it at all.
Yeah, I don't reckon I can remember it happening. But, you know, on the boys' side, obviously, still a big thing. But that's all right. We're working on it. We're working on it. But welcome Chris Anstey to Rob's Rant Island. We're the only two members at the moment, me and Nick, who agree on everything, as it turns out. You know, Brenton is slowly paddling his way ashore, but other than that, we'll jump into the actual topic this week, which is, and it's somewhat tongue-in-cheek, mainly because this also lines up with just things that we've done wrong as coaches, and that's always a fairly humbling path to walk down, I feel like, as coaches. But the topic this week is how to annoy your players. And obviously, we're not telling you to do these things to annoy your players. We are telling you maybe it's a good idea to reflect on some of the things that we have done as coaches, and maybe we shouldn't do some of these things because they can be annoying to players. So, Brenton, we'll start with you on the first one, overcoaching.
Yeah, so for me, I've asked some players about this actually in the past and recently, and I was just asking them, what are some of the things that really, like, annoy you as a player? And, like, the overcoaching thing, I still... I'm not going to do a story time already, am I? Oh,
well, you can if you like.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Jeez, talk about a debut.
Yeah, I know.
I still remember being with the NBL 1 men once here at Knox, and a player who'd been at Knox for a long time, I'm not going to mention their name, a lot of people know who it is, and we were at practice and we were going through stuff, and I kept asking them question after question after question, and he turned around in different language and basically told me, can you just give me the solution, please? But obviously in a bit more colourful language. But that's when I realised, like, sometimes you have to give the players the solution, and, like, constantly asking these questions and they don't understand and doing things like that isn't really the way to go about it. It's a bit different probably with junior athletes, but I think after that I still remember going, yeah, maybe I just have to give them the solution instead of trying to sound like I'm smart or trying to ask those questions. So that was definitely a big thing for me about overcoaching that I learnt from being with men. So
yep. And it changes, I suppose, depending on what you're coaching. Because I think when you're in that senior space, you're not necessarily trying to teach as much in the senior space. Like, you're trying to prepare for a scenario where they just need the information quickly. Yeah. Like, that, it's that kind of thing. Whereas in juniors, you are trying to teach. And it's not necessarily over-coaching, but you are trying to educate them as much as they can so that when they get to that situation in seniors, you're not asking that question because they've already seen that before. But it's hard to get to that point as well because, you know, we are all in that solution-based environment where we want the best for everyone and all those sorts of things too. But overcoaching, where you just get to the point where, like, I was watching a coach train the other day that asked me to come down and have a look at their training session. I'm like, yeah, no worries. Like, went on in, had a look at it, and did a warm-up drill, like no problems. But then for the next 17 minutes, spoke. And it's like, well, what was the point of the warm-up drill for a start? Like, if you want to talk to the players, get them here 17 minutes early and have this chat. Like, if you look around at your training session and after 20 minutes you've still got players with hoodies on, that session plan needs a little bit of reflection, because that's not what it should look like. They should be in a position where they're active and they're doing things. But the over-talk, that's the killer, I think, in that space.
And the over-talk, for me, it really comes down to, as in, like, too much information, too many different subjects or topics that you're talking about. What's most important in what you want to achieve in your 10-minute block of this session, right? It should be no more than three things, and you should just be constantly hitting on those things. I don't think that's over-coaching. I mean, if you disagree, that's fine, but I don't think that's over-coaching. I think over-coaching is, these are the three things, but you've also got to box out. You've also got to, you know, oh, we're going to talk about closeouts, we're going to talk about this, we're talking about that, and we talk about too much. Yep. And it's too much information, and that's where they feel that, hey, this is over-coaching, it's information overload now.
Yeah, well, and players want autonomy too.
Yeah.
Like, they want to be able to make decisions by themselves, and sometimes you're taking away that ability for them to make a decision because you are giving them the answers all the time. So I think it's case in point. Like, it's not every case will require, you know, only answers or only questions. You've got to feel for it, I think, a little bit in that space, but it is the video game coaching. Like, that's the one. Like, that's the one I see the most, where it's like, hey, just quieten down a little bit and let the players kind of work their way through this, rather than you sitting there trying to, like, video control them into what you want all the time. Like, you're not playing. Let the kids work it out. It's more in the junior space. Senior space, I'm not too fussed by it. Like, I think you have to coach in the senior space. Like, that's a different lens altogether. But I think in the junior space, like, we just need to be a little bit quieter at times. Don't not coach. Like, because that's the other end of the spectrum, is that you don't coach anything at all and you just roll the balls out and let them have fun. You know, maybe not the way to do it as well, because there are plenty of kids that want answers and want to get better and want coaching. So trying to find the balance between the two is a big thing, but overcoaching is one that worries me.
It tends to be like perfectionist coaches, right? Yep. They're trying to make something perfect in a world that is imperfect.
Yep.
And that's why they, all right, well, I'm going to control every single possession and pass and dribble and all that sort of stuff. And it tends to be them the most. Like, it's understanding that they're going to make mistakes, there's going to be turnovers, there's going to be missed shots, is a way to kind of let go from that as well.
Kind of overcomplicates the game for them too, I think. So
yep.
Having a player that has a clear mind is kind of what you want. So yep. I've seen it a number of times. I know I've been guilty of it myself, where you kind of give a player all these options, but in the end now they can't make a decision. So
yep.
It's just, how do you make it as simple as possible without overcoaching every possession? Because you can't do that. And it's the same with feedback. Like, I've seen coaches, when myself again, shooting and try and coach every shot.
Yep.
You can't do that. You've got to give them an opportunity to actually do that and go through and learn from experience. So, no, I completely agree. I think the overcomplication and doing too much is
yep.
probably more the overcoaching that we're talking about. But, yeah, just that overcoaching for anyone is something you need to be really mindful of. Even for me, like, I go on court now and it's just making sure that I don't try and do too many points. So, yep. But yeah.
Yeah. Worry about the important things. Mm. Like Julia Walsh spoke about the big rocks. Like, what are yep. the big rocks we can move here to see growth and impact on that one? One of yours, Nick, no training plan or the same three drills on the training plan every week. This is coming from the person that said, I start every training session with shell drill.
This is. Well, there's variations to it.
Is that right? Yeah. There's no coaching without hypocrisy.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, no. Well, the reason I bring it up is, like, first of all, because when I was DOCing over the last few years, I can say no matter what age the kid is, they absolutely know that you are not prepared for a training. And they're annoyed when they're like, well, I've got my stuff together. I really want to have a good session. And there's no plan, especially kids that want to elevate themselves and go higher. They want to see that you have a plan. Doesn't necessarily have to be perfect, okay, but they want to see that there's some sort of structure. So when you don't have a training plan, traditionally you just go to the drills that you can first think of, right? You play some one-on-one, maybe you're throwing in three-man weaves or five-man weaves and all sorts of stuff that you know, two-on-one, you know, that can be part of your training plan, but they know, and the reason they know is because it's not telling a story. Usually a session should tell a story. We're building on this, we're adding these layers, and at the end of it, this should all come together. If you're just throwing in a bunch of random drills, they're annoyed. They're just like, what do I get out of this? I can probably do this with my mates on my own. And I feel like they do get annoyed when there's no structure or guidance. That's what they want as well.
Yep. Session planning is one I'm a little bit sympathetic to with coaches, because not everyone has time. Like, we are sitting in a privileged position where we can do a session plan at work, and it's part of the space we all work in now, to be fair. Where I worked before coming to Basketball Victoria, I also used to do session plans at work. So they were great contributors. But to
can I counter to that? Sorry, yep. I don't mean to cut you off, because I don't 100% agree.
Yep.
And the only reason is we have more technology than ever.
Definitely.
To be able to put session plans together, yep. even if you don't want to pay for it.
Yep.
You can create a template in the spreadsheet, and you can just copy the tab, and then just have, you can still have set plays like your 4v4 shell, yep. Small-sided games through there, and you can add shooting drills and things like that. You can have your favorite drills that you have in your spreadsheet and just copy and paste it. So we're no longer in the phase of, I mean, this is probably not for Brenton, but for me and you, Rob, where it was pen and pad, right? Where we used to write it down.
Brenton's older than you think. I definitely did that.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
Yeah, but I don't disagree. And when you do have that, and it's a little bit of an asterisk, I suppose, involved with that, you also have the ability to use AI, where it's not hard. Like, we had a staff day not too long ago, and someone, you know, was trying to be funny, I think. Said, oh, you know, I've asked, you know, ChatGPT to create me a session plan. I was like, yeah, well, of course it can. Like, I mean, it won't be good, but, you know, the detail is, of course, in the execution. Like, it can give you a template, though, and a little bit of sort of some guardrails where you can jump in there and say, actually, you know, this works, this doesn't work, you know, but I can replace that with something else, and you kind of mix and match a little bit. But I think that is a good way to do it. Like, I know we had Andy on from the Hoops Geek the other week, but that is something I've started using as well. Like, I've just started, when I've got spare 5 minutes, dumping everything into that and just dragging them out for session plans. And it's a really clean and easy way to use it. So I'm certainly not going down the path of you don't need a session plan. I genuinely think you do. But even if it's just dot points on a page, like, it doesn't have to be finely manicured and look like you can hang it in the Louvre. Like, it's, you know, it's one of those things where I think you can, you just need a little bit of guidance. And when in doubt, gameplay.
Yeah,
like, you know, if you've got a little bit of a lull in your session where it's like, geez, I'm not really too sure what to put in here, make it look like a game. Like, that's the biggest thing. And there are tons of things you can use on the Talking Split pages if you're looking for games and such, tons of them on there. So you can go into that. But yeah, like, the session plan, I do agree. Like, you do need to have, like, Brendan, I'm curious, are you one of the people that would have the same plan or the similar plan every week? Or do you like to bring new content in every week for your players?
I'm a bit all over the place when it comes to that, yeah. Honestly. Like, I think there's things that I would use a lot of the time because you want to have some kind of consistency for the players, and that's something I know after talking to them, like, they do get annoyed with, where it's like, well, we're doing something new all the time. We actually can't get better at it. But I think session planning is different for everyone. And, like, for me, I probably don't go in as much detail when I put it on a piece of paper. I just need what I need in front of me.
Yep.
But then the amount of times that it actually goes the way I want it to go – yep. Probably 10% of the time.
Yep.
Because then I'd look at a session plan and I'd be like, I got through these five things, but I had seven things there, and two of them and the things I actually wrote down. But it's still just having what are the key points you're trying to work on. And I think having that builds some confidence in your players and your athletes and the other coaches, because at least you're planning for that.
Yep.
And that's something I know, like, if you expect your athletes to plan, like, work on their game and do things and be prepared and do the things that you ask them to do, you need to be able to do the same thing as well. So I know, coming from my teaching background, it's definitely something that I've learned. Like, we'd plan like a whole unit of work, but in the end it never goes away for the same group. Like, we'll have a different class and it'll be completely different. But having that, like, just structure, like you said, where it's like, this is what we're trying to work on, and it can change. And that's what you've got to be, I think, for everyone moving forward as a coach, you need to be able to be dynamic with that stuff and be comfortable with going, it's not working, I'm going to try something different, but at least you've got a structure there that you can work around.
Yep. I remember watching a clinic with John Calipari when he was coaching in Kentucky, and he showed his, like, session plan to the camera and all that sort of stuff. And he's like, the one thing you'll notice is there are no times on the side. He's like, we work to it till we get it right. And it's like, geez, the luxuries of a college coach. Like, it's, you know, we go for a minute too long, we've got the other coach that's waiting to try and get on the court with their team, sort of giving us the stink eye on the side. But, you know, that's part of it. Like, I do think you want to challenge your players at every session and give them something new, but you can't forget about what makes them good in the first place, which is at times working on something they're not good at. And you have to keep relating back to that. Like, your players, I think you said it before, Nick, your players want to know there's a plan in place for them.
Mm.
Like, that's an important part of buy-in. We talk about culture, and going back to your point, Brent, if we want them to work on their game in their own time, the least we can do is turn up with a session plan that's going to help them.
I don't know how you could actually go in there and actually know what you're working on, though. That's the thing. Like, even if you have the most basic plan possible, at least you've got something there for you.
Yeah.
And like as a coach, I don't know how you could do that. Like
it's a real lonely feeling when you send them off to get a drink and then you're kind of on the clock and it's like, geez, what's next?
Yeah.
Like, and you don't have a plan in play. Like that's, let's just play numbers.
Like, but on the flip side as well, like the training plan, if you have to constantly read it for a long period of time, it's also defeated its purpose, right? Like what Brenton was saying is perfect. Like it's just a referral. Look at this. What's next? Okay, beautiful. Because you've done the research and you've prepared, it's really just dot points. Like maybe there is diagrams, but that's probably for the assistants, right? Like while you're demoing, they can check it out or they check it out before the session. Another benefit of the training plan as well, something I've been doing is sending it to the players the day before.
Yep.
And it really helps a lot of kids just get an idea of what I'm trying to do in the session. So when they come into the session, there's a bit of preparation. We actually did it in trials as well. And that was really beneficial because they could jump on the floor and we could run stuff instead of just running 5-on-5 random basketball. So there's so many benefits to it if you get that organized.
Well, there are. And it's something that Aspect Autism Australia spoke about on the pod a few weeks ago, is the more you can prepare kids that might be neurodivergent for what is coming in the session, the better they will be. They can plan for it themselves. They know how to regulate their emotions and their stimulus and all those sorts of things. So if you are in that position where you can send it to your players, send it to your players. Like, I think it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're on to one of mine at the moment. I have a lengthy list because I've screwed up a lot of stuff over the years, as it turns out. The 20-minute pre-game speech. This is, now to be fair, I have been very good at this of late, mainly because I'm not coaching. But even when I was starting to wind up, I was really big on 90 seconds tops. Like, you don't need to talk to them. They know what is going on in that space. Yes, you may need to corral some energy into a certain direction. I get that one. But the amount of times I go to a game and I see a coach talking to their players before the game, and it's like, oh man, fourth quarter. I thought this is the third. And it's like, it is the third. They're going to talk to them for the whole fourth quarter about what's going on. I'll guarantee you those players do not remember a thing. And all they are thinking is, I want to go warm up. Like, can I just get like some ball and hand work done? Can I get a stretch? Can I get a roll? Can I just do something? I don't want to sit here and listen to your game plan for 20 minutes when all we really need to do is put the ball in one ring and keep it out of the other. Like, just tell me how we're going to do that and that will solve the problem for me. So for mine, shorter is better. Couple of key points. This. Catch you guys out there and we'll see how it shakes out. Like, for mine, cut that thing down as best you possibly can. Did you have a pre-game routine, Brenton? Was there like a time on the clock that you said, okay, everyone come in for, or were you just sort of play it by ear?
Yeah, we had a timetable for the last hour before a game. So that's something I know Coops was really big on and it really helped me. Like, me being who I am, like, sometimes I can get caught up in the moment before a game, and I sometimes was that coach that would go for 20 minutes. But I think the best thing we did, we got down with the athletes and we actually wrote it on butcher's paper and said, what do we want for that last hour? So we had like a 20-minute period where they could get strapped, do what they need to do. And then we'd have like individual meetings where we'd go over the detail for them. So we'd go over the scout, we'd do all of that stuff. But then there was kind of like we put like 5 to 10 minutes where we'd go, this is game plan and whatever we need to go. But that included the whole scout, everything. Yep. And then at the end, the last 5 minutes, we called it pro time. It was literally, this is where you guys can do what you need to do to get ready. And that really helped with them because I just remember one of the athletes saying to me, like, I need this 5 minutes to process everything. But then another one wanted to talk to us. So it just gave the opportunity for them. So I completely agree. I think less is more and just making sure that you're getting the key points across, because the reality is, like, if they don't know it by then, they're not going to know it.
True. You're probably not changing anything that late. I mean, the only change I think that would happen is like, hey, there's an injury to one of their players.
Mm.
This is going to tweak some things on our end, but you're probably sticking with the same plan. Like, you're not going to throw something out, say, hey, we've been hard hitching on these ball screens all week, but because that player's not playing, we're now going to trap it. Like 5 minutes before the game, you're not doing that. So, I think it's simple is better.
Yeah, I reckon we'd have 3 points for offense, 3 points for defense, and then like anything scout related on the board, and that was it. Like everything else was just, okay, we know the game plan.
And that's national level? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, so that was at nationals. Like, I still remember when we went into the game against WA, like, we literally had 3 things on the board. And, like, we just simplified it. And I think that was the best thing we did for that group, because they knew what they had to do. So instead of having that 20 minutes of information, which, there's 20 minutes we could have spoke about, it's just making sure that the 3 key things were hit, and then we went out there and they could be as good as they could be.
Yeah, you might be coaching under, I remember my last year of coaching under 12s, our pregame was literally, we're going that way. and just make sure they knew which direction we were going, and you'd be surprised how often that saved us 2 points.
But yeah, were you still pointing in the jump ball?
Very as much it was, so. Yeah, absolutely. Find your level that you're coaching at and how much information they can actually process on that, because it's not the same for everyone. You will have some kids that are just more, but some other kids it's like, hey, you've hit 2 points and now I'm out.
But I think you hit the sweet spot when you spoke, particularly for juniors on Friday night. 90 seconds, like a minute 30 to go, is probably the perfect amount of time because just going
back. Warm up.
Yeah.
Like your players will know that, like similar to what you were talking about, what do you need to get through?
Yeah.
Like, well, we want to be able to get some layups in, we want to get some shots in, we want to get a little bit of 3-on-3 playing, whatever. Cool. You guys figure that out on that end and I'll work around what I need to get to from there.
Yeah. And like when you were talking about the entire fourth quarter, I've seen that as well. How many times do you watch the players just start to veer off to another court? Oh,
they're watching the other court.
They're just checked out, right? Like, so for me, I did 90 seconds as well, and I just did offense, defense, other. Like, it was just real simple Friday night. Didn't have a lot of time, so they came in 90 seconds before. This is what we want to target offense. This is what we want to target defense. Box out.
Yeah.
Like that would just
be. It's on every one of them.
Yeah, it is. You know?
Yep, no, it makes sense. Makes sense. Brent, one of yours next. Not being authentic with your players. This annoys them.
Yeah, I think I've been victim of this before too, like all of these, as we can tell. Is just not being yourself and going in there trying to be someone else. Like, players see right through that. And that's, again, like coming from the teaching background. If I was like that in the classroom, the kids would eat me alive. So it's just being able to coach the way you need to coach and who your personality is really important, because if you're not that, you're not going to be trustworthy and the players won't trust you. And that's probably the number one thing, is being able to connect with them first. And then, yeah, I think just going in there trying to be that rah-rah coach. I still remember Guy Malloy telling me that, actually. He said to me, he's like, Brenton, you're never going to be me, so go be yourself. And it was one of the best pieces of advice I got, because I'm just never going to be him. That's not who I am. And I don't know if you guys have been victim of it too, but you see it all the time. And it's just, how do you use what you're best at, what your strengths are, and coach the way you want it, you need to coach, not the way that you think it needs to be coached.
It absolutely happened to me. I remember I was coaching with Nick Abdusevich, and all of a sudden I had a Bosnian accent for a little while there. And I was like, what the hell has just happened? Like, this is terrible. This is not what it's supposed to be. But you can. Like, and it is. You've got to try and work out what your players need. And, you know, can you provide that with your personality? Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but find out what they need in that space.
I think the point you just brought up then is probably one of the biggest points. I think the best coaches use their personality to their advantage. They let go. They understand they have imperfections. They're not trying to be someone else. They're trying to be themselves. They're still applying probably similar themes and things like that, but they're using their personality. Mm. I mean, we can see it even at NBL level. Right, like Josh King is Josh King. There is no other Josh King in the NBL.
Yeah, when he sits down and is quiet, it's like something's wrong.
Yeah, something's
off.
What's
going on with him? Like, this doesn't seem normal.
This is how he coaches. This is who I am, and this is how I'm going to coach. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I think, you know, Dean Vickerman's Dean Vickerman. Like, I don't see another Dean Vickerman and Scott Roth and et cetera. So I think the best coaches use their personality. They're open with who they are, and it makes a big point. It does definitely transition your basketball when you kind of let go of, I have to be like that coach or that coach.
Yeah, I need to look like this.
Yeah.
Like, I still remember it, and I was young enough. Well, I'm old enough now, I suppose, to remember it. But like when Gorge first came out, and like the Gorge strut that would be up and down and the hands and all that sort of stuff, and it's like, hey, you're not Gorge.
Mm.
Like, it's, but there was that emulation sort of feel, and you know,
even to a lesser extent. Remember when Coach Carter came out, and everyone was running suicides and checking grades, and
we're still paying the price for that movie at the moment. Like, people that think it's okay to give your players 1,500 push-ups before the end of the week, no,
or throw them against the wall, saying I'm your new basketball coach.
You can't do that either. Like, it's we got to pick the right things out of those more than anything else.
Yeah, I think. The other thing too is, you can't be successful as a coach if you don't know what you believe in too. Like, it comes down to culture stuff too. Like, if you don't know what you think a team needs to be like, I don't know how you're meant to be successful. And that's like going back to what Nick said before about like what's a good person, what's not. And that's what it really comes down to. So how you actually portray yourself as a coach is actually how you model that behavior to your players as well, which is probably the most important thing, because in the end, like, how many of these athletes we're coaching are be professionals?
Yep.
Like, I think you've got to coach them all like they might be there, but at the same time, we've got to prepare them for the real world. And, like, I know when, if I was playing, I would be – I wouldn't be able to trust someone who wasn't trying to be themselves at that time. And that's something that every coach I've ever spoken to, that's the number one thing is, like, can they trust you? Because if they trust you, they'll play for you.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's bang on. It's – you know, you can – and you can always pick it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and it's funny because, obviously, like, Nick and I live in this space where we have to evaluate coaches, like, and you're moving into this space now, obviously, with your state team stuff. the amount of times that we see coaches coach a certain way, but the second they know someone's watching them, they coach totally differently.
Yep.
And that immediately, like that rings alarm bells for me. It's like, well, okay, so you have the ability to do this. You choose not to. You are this, but you're trying to hide this depending on what it is. And you know, very rarely do I walk in there and just go, geez, that coach is a jerk, like just based on how they've coached. It doesn't happen. Like they're giving up their time. They're trying to do the right thing by helping out players. Like you go in with the lens of they're doing the right thing for people, but you do notice that which ones are only on for show. And they care more about who's watching them coach than actually coaching and being in that moment. It's, you know, you always get that little bit of a, you see them look out the sort of corner of their eye and it's like, are they watching me when I'm doing this? And, you know, a lot of the times, and we're going to tie into your next point as well, Nick, which is constantly yelling and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time that is not, one, helpful, two, warranted. And three, it's usually not about the player. It's trying to tell everyone in the stand that you didn't tell them to do that and the mistake is theirs and not yours as the coach.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't know, in for a penny, in for a pound. We're all in this together. If someone makes a mistake, that's your mistake as well because you now have to try and fix it or help them on the path towards fixing it. But the yelling and screaming, Nick, talk to me through this.
Well, for one, it's just white noise, right? Like if you're a parent and you're just constantly yelling at your kid, eventually they're just going to check out.
Yeah.
I think you know, to get upset, you can have those moments. Obviously, right time and place, like if there's a need for it to get them up, okay, but it can't be just constant yelling and screaming. And it certainly should never be, in my opinion, walk in face-to-face in a timeout and scream at them. I think across the floor is okay.
Well, it's loud in the gym. You have to get, where there's music and there's crowd, you're going to have to.
But I just think that the constant yelling, they can't hear it after a while. Like it's so much more effective to have a conversation with someone. Hey, do you understand what I mean by that? Right? If you build that trust and that relationship with them, they'll tell you if they don't. Like I have players that just go, nah, I don't know what you mean. All right, let's walk through it. Beautiful.
Yep.
You know, but they're telling me obviously in training. Okay. But, you know, they're not really asking me that in the game, but. Yeah, I just see these coaches, they're yelling and screaming. I can't hear a word they're saying. I don't know what they're yelling. I can just hear the yelling. And I think you're right. I think it's about, it's theatrics. It's, I want everyone to know that I'm in control and I'm winning and dictating this game. That's what it looks like to me.
I think it comes down to like looking at the outcome more than the like what's actually happening on the court. Like I know when I was younger, I thought me winning games was the difference between me being able to get a full-time job in basketball and not. But then I think the longer I worked with, I was lucky to have really good people around me that told me that wasn't really the way it went. And it was more about how you impacted the players and how you made them feel and where they went to. So I look at like myself, I was that once, really boisterous, thought I had to prove to everyone that I was this loud coach that could coach everything. But going back to the overcoaching comment, like you can't coach everything and you can't control everything. That practice is where we actually can impact the players. In the game, we can make little adjustments. It's how do we make them comfortable and how do we make them not feel like they're on edge all the time?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, we're talking about things that annoy players. Like, think about you in your work environment. Would you like to be yelled at by your boss? Not one person will sit there and go, yeah, I'd really enjoy that. Like, I'd really relish that opportunity. No.
I definitely wouldn't, by the way.
Yeah.
I already know how I react. Good answer.
That's three.
Yeah, I agree with that too. That's two.
Yeah. You're doing well. It's, you're coming up to shore at the moment. But this is the thing.
But like, think about...
how would our players react to it?
Correct. That's what I was going to say. Like, we say something that annoys players. It's worse than annoys players because your resume are the players. And they won't return as a result of being yelled at for a year. So on your resume, it'll be blank because kids don't want to play. And essentially at junior level, your job, your sole job is to make sure that they stay in the sport that they love.
But you being able to have a relationship with them too really matters. Like if you yell at someone all the time, it kind of loses the effect, doesn't it? Like it's a real old adage that, but there's a time and place for it, but it matters how you do it and it can't be all the time.
No, and look at... put my hand up for sure. I was absolutely that as a younger coach where I didn't have the skills or the tools to be able to communicate effectively with my players. So consequently, I treated every player exactly the same, which was I'm going to yell to get my point across and you will play in fear probably more than you will play
four.
I think the other thing to add to that is I don't know if you guys have heard this too, but I'm so competitive. It's just the competitiveness getting the better of me.
Yep.
Like I think that's a horrible excuse to be completely honest. Yeah, like that just shows you have no control. So
well, again, you've gone back to outcome.
Yeah.
Like that's exactly what you were saying before. Yep. You've stopped thinking about the process. Like it's okay to be competitive. Like we're all competitive. No one likes losing. Like Zoe and I walk upstairs. We, you know, there's a little bit of a sort of halfway through at the corner of our eye. Like, yeah, okay, we're on. Yeah, cool. No worries. Who's getting to the top first? But you can be competitive without being demonstrative and abusive towards players and that, because no one performs at their best when they're being screened at.
Yeah, and a lot of these coaches I know, I talk to, they want to coach at like NBL levels or NBL one. If you speak to a senior athlete like that, it's never ending well.
No.
Because who's the first person going?
Yep, exactly.
It's correct, not the player.
It's easy to find a new coach, as we found out. Like it's, you know, that's just the space we live in. So the next one that I had on my end, and I'll combine two into one on this one, subbing patterns that feel like speed dating and benching a player immediately after one mistake. Like this is one that I see all the time. Players just roll the eyes, like they throw a turnover and they just look straight towards the bench. They see the other person standing up and walking towards the bench. They're like, yep, I know this is going to be me. They go in, other player makes a turnover, going back in again, and they never get any feel or rhythm for the game. Like it is so hard. And in particular, because I think players will play better depending on their role. Some people need to start because that is just what they are. Like they don't need that sort of nervous energy, I suppose, as you're sitting on the bench waiting to check in. And there are others that, like, actually I need the game to slow down a little bit before I can come into the game. But it's amazing because I'm not a big believer in, like, subbing patterns and, like, the sheets of, hey, we're making this sub at their time, because I do feel like I want to coach by my gut more than I want to coach by that. It's a nice guide, like, as to, hey, remember, because, you know, we've all had that time where we've forgotten a player. And, you know, I've done that plenty of times, and it's like, man, how long have you been sitting there? And we're like, for two quarters. Yeah, my bad.
And then you sub them on like you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, now you can go.
This is strategic. It's like, nope, I just forgot. But I think it's a nice guide to remember who is getting into the game and when in that space. Let the players feel for the game. Like, you can't be shocked when a player checks in and throws a bad pass or takes a bad shot straight away when they've just got all that built-up nervous energy coming in, and then you yank them out of there straight away again. What do you think is going to happen? It's going to be the same problem when they go back in. So let your players get a little bit of feel for the game. Like, let them get a little bit of a lather going. Let them sort of expend some energy getting up and down, and just take the pressure off the whole mistake equals sub. Sometimes you need players to work through it in that space. And look, there are plenty of players where they'll pick up a foul. It'll be a bit of a dumb foul. They'll complain to the ref about the foul. And then it's like, geez, I'm kind of in this precarious position now where I can either take them out and they can be angry at me, or I can leave them in and they're probably going to pick up another dumb foul like really quickly. So you might find yourself in that position at times where you've got to try and figure it out. But I would rather take someone out of the game after they've done something good, like, rather than when they've made a mistake.
Or really educate them to make sure that they know they're not getting subbed out for something they do wrong. Because I agree with you, right? Like, to a different point, I had a practice game on Saturday, and I had to rotate 14 players. And that
didn't
was
go well.
That was that was speed dating, I can guarantee you, right? Like, they, as soon as they got into it, sub.
Yep.
So, but I don't normally do that, is to my point. So I could see how the players struggled to get themselves into the game and get themselves opportunities, because they started to rush as well. Yep. They started to recognize, hey, I've only got 2 minutes. I better start shooting the ball more, or I'm going to get
make,
on the rim.
Yeah, if I make, you know, a couple here, he can't take me out.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, I'm going to start pressing, get some steals.
I've got 14 players. You're coming out regardless.
Yeah, it's happening anyway, right? Yeah. So when you do that, on a Friday night, for example, with our junior teams, and you're rotating someone, they're very clever, these kids. They know. They go, I get about 2.5 minutes a quarter.
Yep.
They know, right? Yep. You might be saying, I'm going off feel, but we're very like habitual creatures, right? Right. We have this system that we have in us where we just go rotate, 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 rotate. They figure that out. They know how much time they're playing as well. So it's really important that, you don't speed date it, because it does annoy them that they come in, they make a shot, and they come out straight away anyway. So I'm with you, Rob. I really don't agree with I'm not a fan, should I say, of the sub planner and things like that either.
Have you ever used them, Brent?
So I think they're actually a good thing in my opinion, because they kind of gave me an idea of what I wanted to do.
Yep.
And like, I know going into a nationals or something where you've got 12 kids, I mean, you want to try and play everyone because they're still junior athletes. It gave me an idea of what I wanted, but in the end I was still a field coach. Like I'd get probably the first quarter where I could try and get as many people into the game as I could. But the one thing that I noticed when I did that was like people were going in for like a minute and then coming out, and that's when I'd throw it out. But it still gives you a framework on what it should look like. Yep. And I think going into a tournament, like it's different to the NBA where they do that a lot, where you're load managing, they're playing 48 minutes, like it's completely different.
Yep.
So there's a time and place for it. But I think for me, the first quarter and a half, I'd try and stick to something. But then, like Nick said, it's a habit thing. Like I'd go with who I was comfortable with. I'd find what I would kind of work. And then working with your assistants to make sure that you kept that consistent. I think communicating with the athletes is...
Did you make the subs or did the assistants?
I tried to let the assistants take it. That didn't take very long for me to take back.
Yeah. It doesn't usually last long, does it?
No. One-point game with a minute to go. Yeah. Quickly change it, right?
I've got this. Yeah. Well, it's all a feel thing. Like it's... And I think in the end, it comes down to the head coach. You're the one who lives by the sword, dies by the sword, aren't you? Like, if you'd make a decision, I don't want the assistant to have that on their head. And I want to make sure that that's a decision I made. Yep. So, I think having that clear communication with everyone is really important. That's where you kind of lose the athletes in this, and where they do get annoyed is where, like, if you're telling an athlete, like, you're going to play 10 minutes today, but then you go back and they play five, they're not going to be happy with you. No. Or this is when you're probably going to come in. At least you gave them some kind of like...
Yep.
I think you hit on one that annoys players a lot.
Yep.
Just quickly then, hey, you're definitely going to play 10 to 15 and then they don't. If you don't know, don't say it.
Yeah, but promise.
It's like
it's
shying away from that conversation of you're probably not going to play today.
Yep.
Like that's the worst thing you can do. Because now you've got a parent that's going to come after you. You know, an athlete that's going to be annoyed with you.
Yep.
They're going to start talking to other athletes about it. So now you're breeding some kind of like negativity in the group. So like that's something I've done in the past where I haven't done that well, but I learnt. So I know this year at Nationals there was times where we had to do that. I said to someone like they played 5 seconds, but that 5 seconds was really, really impactful. They got a rebound for us because we needed it.
Yep.
But that's all they played for the game. But it's just being clear and concise with them and what it is. And just I think doing that and building that relationship, it always comes back to that.
Yep. Which ties into being poor communicators, Brenton, which is your third point here on this one. Give me your top tips for poor communication for coaches. What are the few you see the most?
Not having uncomfortable conversations is number one. Not talking to the parents is number two.
Yep.
Not communicating with your assistants, which is something I've been guilty of in the past, like just trying to do it all yourself. And then I think just not sticking to your words, the big thing. Like if you say you're going to do something, do it. Like don't try and... tell people what they want to hear, because when you do that, that's just setting yourself up for failure. And the reality is people remember things and you can't hide from it. So
No, you cannot. They're very quick to communicate back to you when you've let them down on something.
Yeah, and it's just, even if it's a hard conversation, it's like coming from a place of care, and like communication doesn't mean just you talking, it's listening as well. Yep. And that's where I think a lot of coaches lose the groups. They're like, well, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm the coach. This is what I'm doing. But having that ability to listen and like decipher what people are trying to say, because usually there's a reason for it. Like I know most parents that I've dealt with that have had an issue or that hasn't been in a positive nature of the conversation, it's usually just because they love their kid and they want their kid to do well. So it's just, how can you help them work through that and understand why things are happening? And same with the athlete, you've got to do that as well.
Yep.
I think to add to communication, part of thing that would annoy players as well is like coaching in generality. So just coming in and saying, fellas, we got to play harder.
Yeah.
We got to defend. We need to get a stop. Like they don't know what that means. Like be specific. Yeah. Give them details. So I think that ties into communication as well, because if you say all those words and let's lift the intensity or let's hustle and all this sort of stuff, walk out and go, I guess he wants us to do this harder, maybe? Yep. Like, they don't know what that exactly means.
Well, if you say lift the intensity and all of a sudden you've got players diving all over the floor trying to take charges, it's like, well, that doesn't actually help our problem. Like, this doesn't make it more intense. Like, it's funny you say that. Gavin Freeman came in and did a session with our association little coaches on the weekend. And that was one of the things he spoke about is talking in generalities and making sure that you are specific with what you say and what you want. So when you sit there and tell a player to concentrate, what do you expect them to do? Like sit there and like look there with a real puzzled look on their face? Like that doesn't mean they're concentrating. It just means, hey, pay attention to what's going on with this because of that. Like that will give them more information as to what they're supposed to be doing than just telling someone to concentrate. Like, it's so be careful with your words in that space.
I think the feedback thing's an interesting one in game too. Like, I think if I was a player and I had a coach constantly coming up to me and telling me things, I think I'd get very annoyed. Like, I think there's a fine line between that. There's some players, and it comes down to knowing the athlete too. So, like, they come off, they've made two or three mistakes, and we've taken them off because of that. Most players know what they've done wrong. You don't need to go up and hit them with that. And then I think the thing that we put in this year, and like I've tried to do in the past, is just making sure that, like, we let them go have that 30-second reset. And I think one of the best strategies we had, someone would make a mistake, like, not do the scout and let someone go right three times. I'm like, and I try not to get emotional about it, which is...
Yep.
Yeah, we all understand that.
Not to trigger the sub straight away when they've made a mistake.
Yeah. And then, like, there's been multiple times where I've been like, get them off, and then I've realised, nah, go sit back down.
Yep.
And then, but then it's just giving them that time to, like, kind of process their own thoughts, and, like, because no one's good when they're emotional.
Yep.
But that's where the communication piece isn't just always, it's understanding and reading the room as well. So, like, sometimes you just don't need to say something.
Yeah.
Just let it go. Yeah, because that's, like, we're all competitive. We're all... heightened when we're playing basketball. That's the like the nature of the game. So just making sure that we understand the athletes, and that's communication in itself.
I'm a big believer, just to add on to that, or to piggyback on it, is I've spoken about this, the post-game speech. I'm a big believer in not having one, right? Like, informing them and letting them know, like, after the game, we're going to shake your hand and say goodbye, you straight into your cool downs, that sort of stuff, because they tend to just carry over, and they know what's important, because of your next practice, you're going to run those things anyway, especially at the start of training. So I'm a big believer that, like, effective communication is like not doing it when my emotions are high, because my emotions are, my emotions are still high, whether I've won or lost, they're really high. And sometimes I can say something, not necessarily bad, but the tone is wrong. Right, the tone is bad, and
what you get back doesn't help, because normally, like, you are in that post game, and the first thing most coaches will say is, "Okay, what did we all think?"
Yeah,
not helpful. Like, you're going to get the same questions. Could have been better at rebounding.
Yeah,
well, that's
could have boxed out.
Didn't box out.
Yeah.
I think one of the
closeouts.
Yeah,
like working with Knox, with Nunny, like, he's really good at the post game. Like, I think. The thing he does, he put goals on the board for the game that are more individual focused, not whether we won or lost.
Yep.
And that's all he'll focus on. And it's like a celebration of people doing well.
Yep.
I think that's a way you can do it. But it's not like Nick said, it can't be emotionally driven. It needs to be like, okay, when I've done it in the past, it's literally like, okay, this is what we're doing next. It's just to give people a break, because sometimes we're high and sometimes we're not. We don't want to go out there. Like the semi-final against Queensland South when we won, same thing, like everyone went in the room because everyone needed to calm down.
Yep.
Because it was a game we weren't meant to win. All this stuff happened, and just the emotion was too much. And then we saw what happened the next day.
Yep.
So we learned our lesson from that. But I think it's just making sure that it's not outcome focused. If you're going to do it, it's more like just this is what we're doing next.
Yep. So Nick, your next one, accountability, but only for certain players. Sounds like playing favourites.
Yeah, so playing favourites, like let's say you have a couple of studs in your team, and I'm not saying that this wasn't necessarily something where if they have other commitments like state or national commitments that they're not allowed to start and they get equal. I don't believe in that either, because they shouldn't be punished if they're playing at that higher level. It's more you coach them just as much as you coach the other kids who aren't in there. That's basically what I was trying to say. So if there's a kid that's not in the plug, or, you know, not in the nail, or not in the gap help, like, you've got to speak to them exactly how you would speak to the other players, because they do get annoyed when they see that player not doing it. It's detrimental to that player as well, because all of a sudden his connection or her connection to the team gets disrupted because you're, hey, I don't need to talk to you about that because you play for Victoria or something like that. It does annoy those players. It does. They get annoyed by, like, well, you know, I know he doesn't come to training, and when he does come to training, you don't even coach him, but you're on to me if I miss a box out, but he missed three.
Mm. That probably shows that you're not confident in your ability too. Like, I think if you're not confident coaching the best kid, then that's a problem. And, like, you need to go address yourself. And, like, I know the best players I've ever coached, they want to be coached more than the ones that are on the end of the bench usually, because they want to keep getting better.
100%
like,
agree.
The best coach, like, the best players in the world want to be coached. They want to keep getting better, and that's why they are where they're at. So it's just making sure that you do your job in the end. Like, you've got to coach everybody. And, yeah, there's different plans for different people because everyone's different, but there's non-negotiable things that you have to hold everyone accountable to, which is what you're talking about, isn't it? And that's what annoys people, is when there's no clarity.
Yep. Well, and newsflash to anyone listening, we do have favourites as coaches.
Yep.
Like, that's the reality. Like, there are kids that we certainly enjoy coaching more than others. They're usually the ones that perform, that are good teammates, that do the little things that, that mean that we don't have to as coaches. Yeah, we do have favourites. The difference is not treating them like they're your favourites as the coach. Like, there's accountability is the key one, I think, there.
Yep.
Treat everyone the same way. Like, and if it's good for one, it's good for the other. And if it's, you know, we need to be at practice 15 minutes early, except you're allowed to come in 10 minutes late. Like, if, like, you say that straight away and you go, no, that can't end well. And it's like, yeah, it's exactly the same way as when you don't, you know, pull them up for not getting to D-trans spots, or you don't pull them up for making the X part. Like, it's those sorts of things as well.
And if or to a point, to add on to that point, 15 minutes before practice and then they rock up late. Yeah. Like, nah, you're good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Exactly.
They all see that, right? Like,
Exactly. And there are times where they can, like, car might have broken down or whatever it is. Again, outlier.
Yeah.
Like, not the norm in that space. You've got to treat every player like they are your favourite. Like, that's the reality. And I think you can, like, do the right thing, exactly what you're talking about, Brent. Do the right thing by your favourites and coach them. Mm. Like, hold them to that same standard because they want to get better. They want to be further along than where they are in that sort of space.
Yeah, and you think about those players too. I think they're the ones that those other people are looking up to too. So if you're coaching them that way, that means that they're going to be trying to get to that standard too. So I think it's like trying to raise the floor all the time. It's not always about who's your favourite. It's like, we're working with this. Everyone's getting coached the same, but these players need to be coached hard too.
Yep.
And if I can coach them hard, that shows that they're like, it's trust again, isn't it? It's a communication piece. You're showing what you actually value.
Yep, always is. One of the ones for me, adding in a new offense every week. Please don't. Like, it's just, I can't put it any more simply than that. The last thing your team needs is more offense. Like, what they probably need is more autonomy to be able to play. Yep. That's your solution to every problem can't be, oh, we'll just put this in. Oh, we'll just put this in. Oh, we'll just put this in. Rather than maybe just change your base. Like, if you've got a basic offense that you might run, oh, they're switching that out. Okay, well, can we just flip it a little bit so we'll put the guard and the big in that exchange rather than the two wings in that exchange where it can be switched out, and now we can actually punish that. It's not about putting a new offense in every week. Like, that's the last thing you should be doing. Just get your players to make reads in that space and let them play the game a little bit more. It's not... You're not solving problems, and nor are you being judged on, oh, man, you should see this coach's playbook. It's like 140 pages. It's like, well, that's 140 opportunities to get something wrong. Make it three. Like, it's that kind of thing. Simple is better in that space. Like, I cannot stress that enough.
Yeah, I think it's if you're constantly adding new offenses in, it's because you don't actually know all the decisions within the first base thing that you've put in. So what I mean by that is, let's take the ball screen, right? You can double it. You can be in drops. You can switch it. What are their decisions based on how they use that screen? What happens, right? So that's what you're actually teaching them. Just by adding, oh, you know, we'll make that a double drag if they're blitzing it. You're not actually showing them why or how to get through that and navigate through that. So they can probably run your offenses, but if you're coaching juniors, like, what are they going to do when you're not with them and they're in another team? That your job is to educate them, get them better, and then pass them on to the next coach. That's essentially what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, I was watching a game of basketball last night, and I still remember watching, they started switching on the second side. And then you see, instead of changing the whole offense, they started playing high-low.
Yep.
And that's something, like, I think we need to focus on more is, like, how do you attack, like you're saying, Nick? Like, at the highest levels, that's what they do, and we're trying to prepare these kids to play at that level. So how do we do that ourselves? So having multiple offenses is hard. I can't even remember more than five myself. So
no, it's a struggle. Like if I'm coaching multiple teams, it's like, geez, which one's the baseline for this team? Like,
and I think that's where we get caught is, like, sometimes what happens the most in the game, and, like, that's what the players need, and the players know that. Like, you don't need to have all these fancy baselines and sidelines and these zones and presses. Like, you just, how do you beat a press? What's your D-trans rules? What's your O-trans rules? And what's your base offense? Like, that's enough for anyone to be successful if you put the detail in there.
Without a doubt. So, I mean, realistically, very few teams would shoot over 50% for a game.
Mm. Mm.
So if you're on defense and you know that more than half of the time the ball will not go through the ring, what are you going to be in more often than not? Transition. Mm-hmm. So just get your transition down and let them play in that transition space, so they've got to create and make decisions for themselves rather than walk upset, walk upset, walk upset, walk upset. Like, again, like, it's just going to stress your players out.
I remember Gorgon had a online thing with us for the Emerging Coach Initiative, and he was talking about that, and he's like, his goal is 80% has to be non-walk-up plays, only 20%.
Yep.
He's like, if you've got more than 20% walk-up plays, you're not playing fast enough. You're not playing the right way. You're obviously not getting stops. You're not playing in transition. And he thinks, like, that's at the highest level. So with kids, I think it's – I look at, like, go back to the state team. That's why we – D-Trans was our massive focus. We'd go back to it and be like, well, 95% of the game's played in transition. Let's just stop that. If we stop that, then we've only got 5% to work on.
Yep.
And it's your compound lift, right? Like, it's your biggest bang for buck, really, in the game. But just adding more and more half-court sets. I'll add to that as well. Adding more and more sideline and baseline out-of-bounds.
Yeah, they're never the answer.
You know, four or five of them, and it's like, well, it's such a small percentage of the game. Like, why are you focusing
coverages,
on this?
Coverages are the same. Like, the amount of coverages people put in there, like, what do you need? I remember Cutler actually said he's got his bell ends. He'd be like, I'm going with, like, something that's passive and something that's aggressive, and that's all we're working on.
Mm.
And I think that makes complete sense. Like, it's just instead of having these multiple different ways to defend things, what's the best thing for your team? Like, if you have a big that, like when we had Saar, we had to play drops with him. Yep. But everyone else was a jam and under. So it's just doing what's best for your team and not trying to do everything.
Well, and I mean, realistically, ball coming in from the sideline probably doesn't look a great deal dissimilar to a wing entry into your offense. So just run the same offense. Like, who cares? Like, as long as you get the ball in, you're fine. Like, that's what you're really after in that space.
Or use it to teach a concept.
Yep.
Like, at the moment with my team, we're running some different actions, but we've thrown an inbounds play and we're like, oh, we also want to teach how to use a double drag, so we'll just put it in there.
Yep.
You know, use it to teach something as well.
That makes a lot of sense. A couple of last ones before we bounce out of here on this one. Making the whole team run because one person made a mistake. I can see how that would be annoying. So please don't do that, coaches. It turns out it annoys our players.
That's old school, man.
It's very old school. It's I don't know that I'd be doing that too often. When the coach says just one more rep, so that never happens. Like, and I am so guilty of this. It's not funny.
So bad.
It's like, and it's usually when you got coaches at both ends. It's like, okay, one more time through. Then you look down the other end. They're still going. It's like, no, just keep going. Just keep going. Just keep going. Like, it's that sort of stuff. So maybe just don't use that language. More than anything else.
And I think making sure that, like, it comes back to, like, saying what you're going to do. Like, if you're going to finish practice in an hour and a half, don't go over an hour and a half.
Yep.
Because these people, like, I look at these kids, like, how much they have to do.
Yep.
Like, they've got their time ready. The parents have been at work. Everyone's done all this stuff. An extra 10 minutes, like, that's 10 minutes out of their time that you've taken away, and you've already taken so much time. So just making sure that you stick to your word. And, like, if we're going to go for an hour and a half, that's what we're doing.
Or it's like, to go further in that drill of 10 minutes, don't go over the 10 minutes. Like, I'm just a big believer. I know people that keep going sometimes. I'll stop it short if I've hit what I've wanted to hit. But everything's a time constraint, right? Like, they're seriously playing to the clock running down. So if they haven't got it right in the 10 minutes, then we just move on.
Yep. Giving sarcastic feedback, which is roughly 80 to 90% of my feedback tends to be in that lens, but players don't understand it. So don't use it is probably the easiest way on that one.
Is that age dependent, obviously?
You can probably get away with a little more with seniors.
Yeah,
under 12s, zero sarcasm. Yeah, like, they understand nothing at that point. So it's just, and it's a fun age group, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I wouldn't be leaning into that one. And the last one is talking about their playing days whilst they were a coach. Your players don't care. Like, they don't care if you used to be a player. At the moment, you're their coach. Be their coach. That's... Oh, you know, who hasn't been cut down by a knee injury or a back injury? You know, I was going to the league until this happened. You probably weren't.
That was like my life, Rob.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Me too, as it turns out. But
also,
my big basketball days.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They're not interested in that. Don't talk about yourself. Talk about them and how you can get them better and what you're going to do with them, for them, you know, because of them in that space. That's your players don't love listening to stories. If it doesn't relate to them, don't bother with it. It's otherwise, it's just wasted words, unfortunately. Right, that wraps us up. Brenton, you have survived the debut episode. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think we're going to get you on, unfortunately, before you take off for Samoa. So good luck in that, obviously. And we'll throw the link out there for everyone that wants to have a little bit of a watch of it. Nick, you're here all the time. But, you know, we'll see you again next week, no doubt.
Thank you.
Coaches, thanks very much for listening. Catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.